the session. It is November 29th, 2001, and we are at Milton Cohn's apartment in Haverford, Pennsylvania, and I am David Silver with Milton Cohn. I guess the first question on the list, Milton, is why did you go to work for the SEC?
Well, because it seemed like jobs in private practice weren't available, and the government was the interesting place to work because it was in the middle of the New Deal and all kinds of exciting things were going on in Washington. And SEC seemed to be one of the best places to get that experience.
What year were you at the law school?
I finished law school in
1935. 35. So you went right to the SEC,
right,
from law school. Just to follow that up a little more, when you had the constellation of alphabet agencies by that time, as a young man, was it that the SEC had particular interest to you among the others, or was there a general reputation of the SEC as being a particularly interesting and important alphabet agency?
Well, I think the SEC did have a special reputation, but it was kind of accidental that I ended up there. When I finished law school and didn't have a job in private practice, they sent in applications to several different departments and agencies of the New Deal, and the first one that I got a response to, a favorable response, was the SEC. So I went to the SEC. So it was kind of by accident that I became a securities lawyer.
I suppose that happened probably to most of us,
yeah,
one way or another. Milton, when you went to the SEC, I noticed that you started out in what ultimately became the Division of Corporation Finance.
Right.
And in 35, was Joe Kennedy still chairman? I suppose he was. So.
I think he left about when I got there. I think that same summer, I think there was a change. I can't remember who became the... might have been Landis who became the chairman.
Who did you work for? Who was the director of the...
A man named Harold Neff, N-E-F-F. He was a Wall Street lawyer who came down to Washington and who was a wonderful mentor for teaching how to draft formal documents. And he sort of... made the point that the if you were writing poetry, you expressed the same idea in as many different ways as possible. But if you're writing a rule or a regulation, then you use the same word, mean the same thing all the time. You didn't vary the words.
Was there much regulation writing still going on when you were there, or the initial round of regulation?
Oh, yes. I had a hand in the original registration of securities form, what became S-1. I think it had a different designation originally. And I had a hand in the original proxy rules.
Was Barney Woodside there when you got there?
Yes, he was.
Did you know him in your first go-round?
Sure.
About how big was the division? Just to give me some idea. We have that in the record somewhere, but I'm kind of curious. Were you dealing with 100 people? Or
in the forms and regulations?
Yeah.
Oh, maybe 8 or 10.
Oh. Then... after a couple of years, you went to a Public Utility Holding Company Act section. Was that Division of Corporate Regulation? Did they call it that at the beginning?
Or? No, they called it Public Utilities Division.
Why did you go there?
Well, the Public Utility Holding Company Act was enacted in 1935. and it looked like the exciting place to be. It was a very interesting statute with a lot of active business going on, and I just thought it would be a challenging place to be, and it was.
Just switching back for a moment to your time in Corp Fin, I see you worked on S-1 and some of the proxy rules. Was that sort of the most, from your point of view, the most significant work you did at, in Corp Fin?
I think so.
Who ran the Puka division when you got there?
I think a man named Joseph Weiner and another man named Bob O'Brien were the directors, and then I became director in 1943.
Is that the same Joseph Weiner who was later reincarnated at some point as a consultant with a, during the special study, or?
I imagine so.
How many people were in the division at the time, at that division, about the time you became director or the time you started working for it?
I can't really remember, but I would guess it was around 30 or 40.
What was the main workload of the division back then? I know, you know, and only in very general terms, what the Public Utility Holding Company Act was all about, but I'm not sure what the actual workload was when the Act was first implemented.
Well, the major feature of the Holding Company Act was to eliminate all holding companies that weren't economically, geographically integrated and corporately simplified. Those terms were defined as the standards to test a permissible holding company. And the job was to eliminate unnecessary write-ups and the hold it a minute.
Talking about the work of the division in the early days when you were director of the division.
Well, the whole job was to examine each holding company system separately and decide whether it met the standards of being geographically integrated and corporately simplified. And We worked by teams. We had each holding company system assigned to a different group. And I was in overall charge of all of it. But my main direct assignment was with the electric bond and share system, which was the largest of all the holding company systems. It had three sub-holding companies, American Power and Light, Electric Power and Light, and National Power and Light, and the question was whether each of those was a necessary holding company and could stay in existence. And we examined each of those separately and in various different approaches we found that none of the three could stay in existence, so they all had to be dissolved and by the time you dissolved them, there was nothing to hold the collective bond and share structure together, because these subholding companies were what provided the leverage to allow collective bond and share to control the whole system with a very limited investment. So when you knocked out the intermediate holding companies, that was the glue that held the whole thing together, and the electric bond and share had to end up being just a service company. It could no longer be a holding company. And that was a major accomplishment of the Holding Company Act. Now, one of the interesting provisions of the Act was that these definitions of being geographically integrated depended on, quote, the state of the art. And of course the state of the art has changed a great deal, so that systems that could not be interconnected economically under the state of the art at the time have since become interconnectable, and therefore the application of the Holding Company Act today is quite different from what it was then. Now you have direct transmission, direct current transmission that was not then feasible. So the Act served its purpose at the time, but to some extent its purpose has changed because of the change of the state of the art.
I want to get back to that, but going back to the very beginning, how did, as the division started off after the Act was passed, how did you identify the holding companies that were subject to the Act, or did they come in and identify themselves?
These were all public companies, and so the basic existence of them and the facts about them were public knowledge.
I know, take Electric Bond and Share and some of the others, that as soon as you got going, it looked like the commission was beset with all kinds of litigation challenging the constitutionality of the Act.
That's right.
The administrative process.
That's right.
And just about anything else that the lawyers could dream up. Did the work of the division carry forward during that litigation, or was the litigation disrupted? In some sense, it had to be disrupted, but what actually happened during the pendency of the litigation, which went on for many years? Electric Bond and Share, I think, went on almost through the war aspect of it anyway.
Well, we were able to carry on all the way through. We never had to interrupt because of pending litigation. We were never enjoined from proceeding.
Did you work on any of the litigation, or was that or elsewhere?
Well, I worked on all of it in the sense that I was, in effect, the client of the lawyers who were arguing the cases. So I would participate in the preparation of our side of the case. But I never argued them in the courts or anything like that.
I noticed that in simply looking at some of those cases, the appearances, that Tony Corcoran was actually, his appearance was noted in several cases. Did he actually work on those cases, or was his appearance a nominal one?
Well, the original case, which upheld the constitutionality of the registration provisions, not the death sentence, but the registration provisions, was argued in the Supreme Court, I think, by Tom Corcoran and Ben Cohen. And that was upheld, and therefore the original effort by the industry to throw out the act failed, and we could go on and implement it.
I noticed that not in the earliest cases, but just a little way on, Dave Ferber's name starts appearing. Was he in the general counsel's office?
Because he was general counsel's office, and Milton Freeman was there, and some of the other people worked closely with us, but they were our inside counsel, in effect.
I think you answered this already, but if you want to expand it, I take it you consider that in its time and the circumstances that prevailed, that the Holding Company Act was very successful in doing what it was intended to do.
Very much so.
I understand what you said about the geographic integration, but of course, I guess the other half is the simplification part of it. And I would suppose that is still alive somewhere, if not, or at least the need for a simplified structure when you're dealing with a regulated utility. Do you have any views on that?
That still applies. That's still valid, yes.
I noticed that there are about, I took a look the other day, I can't remember the exact number, there are about 25 registrants still under the Act.
Now?
Yes. I was surprised to hear that there were that many, although some of them look like they may be some double counting, in the sense that they look in a couple of cases to be members of the same corporate family registered twice. There have been talk all during the late 80s and 90s about repealing the Act. Did you follow any of that and the proposed legislation that would, I suppose, transfer some of the Act to FERC?
I don't remember that latter point, but there was a period when there were congressional hearings about maintaining the Act or repealing it, and I did testify before a congressional committee on that subject, and we were successful in having the effort defeated so that the Act stayed alive and was not repealed.
And do you have any current view as to whether it should continue in place at the SEC? Or, obviously, I'm not speaking about details now. I'm speaking about in general terms, and particularly with respect to the structural questions of utilities.
Well, I think it should stay at the SEC. It could go over to FERC because it's closely related to what they do, but I think leaving it where it is okay.
No, if we can go back to the early days and leave the public utilities, I noticed that some of the people whose work we looked at during the special study were, in fact, on the staff back then. I noticed that David Saperstein, for example, was director of the trading division at the time. Did you know him?
Yes. But he wasn't involved in the special study.
No. We looked at a lot of his work during the special study. If you remember the so-called Saperstein interpretation of the duties of specialists.
Right.
There was someone else who passed away recently, who did some economic work, Raymond Vernon. Did you know him?
Yes, sure.
Was he in the trading division
too?
I think so. I'm not sure.
He did some early work on specialists, if
I recall.
You were with the commission, and I suppose you made the move to Philadelphia.
Yes. I was, most of my latter years were in Philadelphia through the special study.
What?
No, I said that wrong. The special study was back in Washington.
You're right. What did the commission do during the war in the sense that did any of its work become war related?
Not very closely, although the chairman of the SEC, who that was Ganson Purcell at the time, certified that I was a necessary, I had an essential job as a civilian and should not be drafted. So he considered it, and the draft people apparently considered that I was deferrable as a necessary civilian.
But the work of the commission itself did not become involved in the war effort.
No, no.
I think there was something I saw at one time indicated that some of the filings with the commission by international companies, particularly the ones with German connections, obviously, did provide some information as to the location of strategic plants, etc. But that sounds just more like turning the records over to the military than the commission itself.
That's right. I don't remember any of that.
And so when did you leave the commission in your first incarnation?
In 1947.
If you had to think of the chairman and the commissioners you knew during that period, how would you rate them the point of view of effectiveness, etc., that any people stand out in your mind as being outstanding?
Well, they were all very supportive and very competent in different ways. They had different experiences. Judge Haley had been there for many years and had a long background with the commission. Bob McConaughey was a very, very bright lawyer. Well, they all were very bright, and they were all very supportive. We would report to them regularly and talk about where we were headed, and they kept giving us the support we needed in personnel and in resources of various kinds.
I guess you were there during the period that Justice Douglas was there.
Yes.
I don't think he stayed very long.
That's right.
And then Jerome Frank succeeded him?
Yes.
Did you work with either of them?
Yes, not very closely, but yes. They were there before the Oldie Company Act, really. They were there when I was with the forms and regulations.
Were there any of the staff members that you worked with fairly closely that stand out in your mind as being particularly effective?
in their work.
Well, thinking back that many years, I get a little confused between who was on the staff of the special study and who was on the staff of the Holding Company Act. So I'm having difficulty answering your question.
The switching over to the, or you may have the same difficulty, but switching over to a private bar, did any of the private bar who worked with or worked in opposition to or et cetera, any particular firms stand out in your recollection, or any lawyers being particularly effective, whether they were helpful or obstructive to your work in the Public Utility Holding Company Act or in the Corfin area way back then?
Well, Reed and Priest was pretty active, I think. And I can't remember now who represented Electric, Bond, and Share, but it was one of the major Wall Street firms. I just can't remember who it was.
I think Wendell Wilkie was a public utility lawyer. I don't know if he ever practiced on the national scene or not, but I think I remember he may have been. Did you ever run across him?
Well, he was head of one of the major holding companies. I didn't have much to do with him personally, but he was a great opponent of the Holding Company Act, and before he ran for president.
Did you, in your job, did you interact at all with the Hill back then, or the administration, the executive branch?
Well, I mentioned before that I testified about the in Congress about the continuation of Holding Company Act. That was my main interaction.
Well,
I didn't on an ongoing basis. I didn't report to the Congress at all.
I'm thinking in terms of our later experience in the special study, and in my case, of some period thereafter, and being an observer of the Commission's work in recent years, the Hill interests itself in the work of the SEC in various ways, oversight capacity, sometimes at the behest of clients of theirs. Did you get any of that during the administration of the Holding Company Act?
I don't think so.
Was it generally felt then that the independent regulatory agencies were independent? Was that sort of the spirit of the time in which you acted? Or was there any sense that you were implementing a the philosophical agenda of the New Deal?
Well, we were always aware that Congress could intervene any time and hold hearings and repeal and amend the law, but they never made us feel threatened by that. Except the one time when we did have the hearing I mentioned.
During the period when you were the division director, let's say, of the holding company division, how would you view this in terms of the resources of the commission? What percent of the total effort of the commission was devoted to the holding company area as against the 33 Act or the 34 Act? I'm trying to just get some sense as to how the commission divided its resources.
Well, I think that the Holding Company Act was by far the most important part of focus of the commission's attention. I think they spent more time listening to the ongoing work of the Holding Company Act than any of the other divisions.
Yet, I guess during that period, obviously, the 33 Act was having its first still in its infancy, really. Recall from the special study days, looking backwards, that you had things like the multiple trading case mm-hmm. under the Exchange Act.
Mm-hmm.
So I guess there were things going on all over
mm-hmm.
Back then. When you left the commission in what year?
1947.
Did you feel it was simply time to leave?
Yes.
And where did you go to directly from the commission?
Went out to Chicago and started practicing law in Chicago.
The same firm that you have been identified with for many years?
Yes, same firm.
What was it called back then?
I think the first name was Pam Herden Reichman, but the name changed over the years. It's now Schiff, Harden, and Waite.
I guess during the round table you told us all as to how you got back to the commission through Bill Carey.
Yes.
And obviously over the years you would observe the work of the commission in that interim period between 47 and 62, I think. When you got back to the commission, did anything strike you as to how the commission was different as you came back to it in the 60s as against the commission you remembered in the 40s?
Back in the 30s and 40s, everybody was very enthusiastic about the work of the government and of the commission. Everybody thought that was saving the world to carry out the laws. In the interim, during the period that I wasn't at the commission, I noticed that there was much more of a tendency to blame the government instead of looking to the government as an important factor in the economy. So there was this sort of philosophical difference that I sensed as to how important the commission considered itself and was considered by Wall Street and by the Congress.
And obviously the commission was different in a number of respects, but was it still basically the same internal organization compared to separate divisions of the General Counsel's office? What was the interaction with the commission and the staff was approximately the same, given the difference in personalities, obviously, or was there anything different about the way the commissioner and staff interacted during your two tenures?
I can't identify any real difference there.
When you got to the special study and you made your first assessment as to how we were going to divide the resources for the study, did you have any feeling about what part of the special study very, very, very broad warrant should receive the greatest emphasis based upon what you had observed about how the securities industry developed and how the commission had responded or not responded?
Well, I thought that in the interval there was a feeling that the New York Stock Exchange was the top dog and everything it did was likely to be okay, and I remember that Keith Funston, who was then the chairman of the New York Stock Exchange, said that in effect that the study should study everything but the New York Stock Exchange, and we soon concluded that the main focus should be the stock exchange, and so the whole internal and external workings of the exchange became the main subject matter of the special study, as you know.
Yes, I do remember, Milton, that your organization of the study, with the list of projects going from 1 to perhaps 40 or whatever it was, that number 1 was the New York Stock Exchange. So I guess that reflects your assessment of what had to be done.
Yeah.
What, in retrospect, now in special study time, what do you regard as the greatest successes of the special study?
I guess I think we studied lots of things more thoroughly than they had ever been studied before. But one of the most important things we did was to identify some problems that were emerging that hadn't been looked at much before, hadn't even been recognized, like institutionalization and automation. And globalization. Those were three developments which were just beginning to show up but hadn't received any attention at the commission. And we identified them and made the first serious studies of institutionalization, for example.
Do you think that the study was successful in the short run, medium run, or long run in reorienting the allocation of resources within the commission?
Yes, I think so. I think it was very successful. Previously, there had been more attention to the 33 Act registration, and the the study focused on the market for buyers and sellers, and the whole business of a continuous market and the importance of the clearing function were recognized by the study in a way that they hadn't been by the commission previously.
You have any feeling, and again, this is really just a personal impression or not a judgment, as to why the commission went off in that direction during the 50s, after all, back at your first time around, there was some activism under the Exchange Act and the regulatory function of the exchange, the multiple trading case and had some other activities. Did you ever develop any sense of why the commission started effect, not intentionally, de-emphasize their work under the 34 Act, concentrated more heavily on the 33 Act?
Well, in general, I think that the the political climate was different. It partly when the New Deal under the Democrats, there was a feeling that government was the answer to lots of problems. And in the Republican period, there was a feeling that government was part of the problem. I think that was the Reagan philosophy later on. And so I think it was the fact that Kennedy came in and there was that spirit that government was had the job to do that the previous administration hadn't emphasized that made the difference.
In the special study, of course, again at the round table, there was some discussion of the interaction between the special study staff and the commission, and I think you stated your views as to Bill Carey, but without ranking or trying to rate them, who did you find the most effective in commissioners during your tenure as a special study?
Can you remind me who the commissioners were then?
Well, you had Bill Carey, Barney Woodside, Manny Cohen, Jack Whitney, and I think you all may have come in.
Who is the man from Maine?
The Senator. Was Senator Freer on the committee?
Yeah, Freer was on. What was your question?
My question was, which one of the commissioners did you find in the special study as being the most effective in either commenting upon or working with you as director of the study?
Well, Manny Cohen was probably one of the most important.
What would you regard in your long career, in both of your incarnations at the SEC, as what work you remember with the greatest feeling of pleasure?
Both the Holding Company Act work and the special study seemed to me to accomplish quite a bit, and I felt we made a difference, and a big difference, and that was a source of much satisfaction, still is. I'm very proud of both of them.
Is that to say that if you had to do it all over again, you would do both?
Sure.
Do you think that the SEC is still a good place for a young person, man or woman, out of law school to go?
Yes, I think so.
Switching all the way back now, just sort of personally, where did you live when you first got to Washington back in 1935?
Well, when I first got there, I wasn't married, and I lived with various roommates in small apartments. In 1939, Ron and I were married, and we then had a house out in Alexandria for a year, and then we moved back into the district and lived off Wisconsin Avenue somewhere in the northwest area of the district.
When you went there in 1935, what was your salary?
I would guess it was $2,000 a year.
I think I would end the session there, and with my own personal view, Milton, the government got a great bargain.
Mm-hmm.
So it included 1120.
Okay.
Unless there's anything you really want to ask.
Thank you very much.
Thank you for participating.